Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The race is on for Maryland's U.S. Senate seat. The winner will replace retiring Senator Ben Cardin. And tonight, we sit down with Montgomery County Councilman Will Jawanda, who hopes to win that seat. Yes, he is running for Senate. He's answering our questions and yours. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You are welcome to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Councilman, thanks for joining me. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
All right, let me just start right off the top. This obviously is the biggest political move of your career. Why do this?
Well, these are basically lifetime appointments to the U.S. Senate. Senator Cardin did a great job for over 50 years between the state legislature, the Congress, and the Senate. This is probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity at a moment in time where we have once-in-a-generation problems. We have people stretched to the max, can't afford their rent, can't afford their mortgage, struggling to take care of their health care needs, trying to afford child care, send their kids to college, retire with dignity, earn a job that pays a living wage, worried about the environment, worried about whether our democratic systems can actually solve those problems I just listed. As we get attacks from the Supreme Court and seemingly everyone in Congress can't get together. So I think we're at a unique time in history, and I'm excited to run with a real simple message that, yes, we can solve these problems. It's not going to be with scapegoating each other. It's going to be saying, if you do well, I can also do well. It's a lie to say opposite of that, and I think too many of our politics right now are trying to be zero sum and divide us. So I'm running with bold solutions. As you know, I've been on the Montgomery County Council. I represent over 1 million people of the 6 million in our state already. Passed the first in the state guaranteed income, the first criminal justice reform, the largest summer jobs program in the county's history. I'm literally in the thick of addressing these problems in our largest county. I want to do it for the state. I want to do it for the nation. And oh, by the way, I worked in the United States Senate for 8 years for Senator Obama, for Sherrod Brown, worked in the Obama White House. I know how to get things done on Capitol Hill, too. So I'm excited to bring a bold, progressive vision to the Senate at a time when we really need it. The old solutions aren't working, and I think that's why we need bold, progressive, innovative ideas, and that's why I'm running.
You're running as a Democrat. That seat, obviously, and as it relates to Maryland's two Senate seats, they've been held by Democrats for what seems like forever. And, you know, with that said, considering the politics on Capitol Hill, it really is about the numbers. And so if you were to win, or either one of the opponents who are running against you wins, and we're going to talk about them in a bit, that's kind of status quo. What makes you different? Why should someone, certainly, consider you? I mean, I know you.
I appreciate that.
But you arguably don't have the same kind of name recognition that your two opponents have, Congressman from the 6th District, David Trone, and Prince George's County Executive Angela also Brooks.
Yeah, well, a couple things. One, I actually think that's not actually correct, and I know you wouldn't say that thinking it was incorrect. Of the three of us running, I represent the most people, 1.1 million of 6 million. We're the largest county. I've been elected twice as the top vote getter in this largest, most diverse county, which is important as well. I also have gotten the most votes. I got 250,000 votes last November in my reelection, more than Congressman Trone, more than County Executive Also Brooks. This is a statewide race. I get elected again by a very diverse constituency, 50% white, 20% black, 20% Latino, 10% Asian. I get votes from everybody, all demographics. I'm also the only one in the race that's actually worked in the United States Senate. I drafted bills for Senator Brown. I was counsel on the Senate Health, Education, Labor, Pensions Committee for Sherrod Brown and for Barack Obama. Then worked in the White House. I know where the bathrooms are. I know how to do it. I've worked with Republicans. When I was there, President George W. Bush was president, and Mike Enzi was chair of the Help Committee, and the Republicans controlled the body. Some of my best friends are still there doing as staffers or chiefs of staff, some in the Congress now. I know how to negotiate and work at that level. But I've also been working at the local level. You know, over the last 3 years, how much us local at the local level had to manage. We had over $300 million in federal money during COVID. I know the relationship and how the push and pull works. And then the final thing I'll say is I'm representative of the challenges and the opportunities we face now. I'm 40 years old. I'm what they call a geriatric millennial, apparently.
Okay.
We are actually almost a quarter of the population, those 25 to 41. There's only one of us in the Senate, John Ossoff from Georgia. I think we need, if we're going to solve the challenges that AI is going to bring to our workforce, if we're going to solve how to deal with financial systems, with crypto and everything, marijuana reform, all the things that are happening, we're going to need some people that are dealing with these problems in real time. My wife and I, Michelle, and I know she's listening. Hi, honey. We have her parents that live with us. We're an intergenerational household. We have four young children, Aaliyah, Addison, Ava, and William. And we have a ton of student loan debt. We are literally living through the challenges that people are facing. I think that's a unique thing. We need that perspective in the Senate, and that's what I'm going to bring.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Montgomery County Councilman Will Jawando. He is a candidate for Maryland's U.S. Senate seat that will be vacated by retiring Senator Ben Cardin. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. As always, we'll be taking phone calls all the way up until right before 8 o'clock. Okay, so let's talk about, you know, your competition. I counted today. Angela Alsobrooks has 68 endorsements, and David Trone has about 25. I looked on your page. I didn't see any in the endorsements. Who has endorsed you, and do you believe that they matter?
That's a great question. You know, when you count those endorsements, those, if they live in Maryland, those are about, that's 68 votes and 25 votes in a state of 6 million. But yes, of course, we're going to have endorsements too. We are rolling out a whole set of endorsements actually next week, and I'll, you can, hopefully your report on that will be.
But can you tell me?
I can tell you who we have already. Some of that, I don't want to break the news of some that are coming on board. But I'll give you an example of a mayor of the west town of Westminster in northern Maryland. Mm-hmm. She endorsed Mona Becker, a town up there. It's kind of the Carroll County. Again, important thing in this race, votes need to come from everywhere.
That's, you know, true.
You're running around the whole state. And you have to have appeal. She was our first named endorsement. We announced her a few weeks ago. I'll be announcing several endorsements from across the state next week. I just really can't get ahead of that. But I will say to your second question, yeah, endorsements are nice. They make us candidates feel good. But at the end of the day, it's the voters. As I mentioned, I've had more votes than either one of my opponents. When I'm on TV, when I'm on this radio station, people from Prince George's County, Montgomery, this area, this downstate area, are watching me on local TV. You've talked to me before. I've been tackling the challenges we're facing. I think people know me well, and they know that I'm going to go there and fight for them. I think what people are tired of is this old kind of status quo establishment. I'm running against a billionaire and an establishment Democrat. I'm the bold progressive candidate in this race, the one who's passed a prevailing wage, who's stabilized rents for our 400,000 renters in our county, the one who's passed once in a generation criminal justice reform. That's what people want. And as we tell the story over the next 10 months, we're going to get around the state and we're going to raise enough money to do it. And I just think that endorsements are nice, and we will have our fair share. But that is not what wins elections. We wouldn't have Governor Wes Moore if it was about endorsements.
About the governor, he was on this program a couple of weeks ago, and I asked him who he was going to endorse for Senate. And in his...
He probably smiled.
Well, he was on
on the phone.
I'm telling my age now. You remember that old commercial, "It's so good to hear you smile." Yes, I could hear him smiling, but he also essentially said, not endorsing yet. Certainly, you know, you would want his endorsement.
Sure. Absolutely.
How do you feel about that? Do you think it's too early? Because, as I said, also Brooks has endorsements. Trone has endorsements. You just said that you are also going to be announcing your endorsements. Some would say that that's the cherry on top of the political sundae.
Oh, I would agree. I mean, I think Governor Moore first is off to a great start. I'm proud to be the first elected official in the state of Maryland to have endorsed now Governor Moore. I did it in June of 2021, and in his words, he was polling at less than 1%. He was not the front runner, a position that I think is a good position to be in. Three of us had been in a room a couple of weeks ago. The Baltimore Banner reported it this way. They said you had the millionaire self-funder, the establishment candidate, and also works in the rising star in Will Jawando. I'll take that in the Democratic primary. I think Governor Moore will make a decision sometime later in this process. And as I said, I've known him over 10 years. The dearly departed Elijah Cummings, Howard alum, connected us years ago. And that's how I knew Wes's character and the governor's character. And I was proud to support him. And I'm glad others came along. But I think I feel good about where the governor will end up.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, talking to Will Jawando, Montgomery County Councilman and candidate for U.S. Senate in Maryland. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Let's go to the phone lines. Michelle calling from Maryland. Michelle, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm calling because I want to say congratulations to, first of all, Council Member Jawando. I am one of his constituents in Germantown, Maryland. I am an African-American by way of Liberia and Nigeria, and I would want to know what if he does win the Senate, what opportunities will he allow for us as minority women businesses trying to get more opportunities here in the county.
Thank you, Michelle. I'll go right ahead.
Thank you, Michelle, and good to hear from you, and thanks for calling in. You know, small businesses are the life's blood of our economy, not just in our county, but across our state. In Montgomery County, over 85% of our businesses are less than 15 people. And both my mom and my stepfather are small business owners. My mom has a bake shop. My father has a transportation service. I understand what it is to have a small business. My job has been and will be to support you. I passed a bill in Montgomery County, as you may know, to increase the amount of procurement, of our $1 billion of procurement in Montgomery County that goes to small women-owned, minority-owned businesses from 20% to 30%. I also required that small purchases under $10,000, half of them go to small minority businesses. We do over $100 million in that category, so you can get your foot in the door. I also passed during the pandemic rent relief for small businesses that are storefronts. The number one cost for families is rent or mortgage. It's also the number one cost for small businesses. Those are programs that I'll work with our SBA, work at the federal level to make sure there's funding for, make sure we expand. Because when small businesses, when women-owned businesses, when businesses of color succeed, America succeeds. That's what built this country. So I'll be a big advocate for those, as I have been at the local level.
Okay, Michelle, thank you so much again for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Maryland U.S. Senate candidate Will Jawando, who is also a Montgomery County Council member. We're going to take a break, but Big J calling from Maryland, Cindy calling from Virginia, April calling from Maryland. We are going to talk to you next. Please do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. So stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This conversation continues in just a few seconds on Sirius XM Channel 141. We'll be back in a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking to Montgomery County Councilman and U.S. Senate candidate Will Jawando. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Of course, you can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. A lot of folks on the phone. Let's go back to the phone lines. Big J, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you to give me this opportunity to speak out.
Sure.
It's only victim who can speak out. If we get this a council elect to become a senator, where he will do different way for black community, because when you're black, you call your senator office, he's supposed to listen to you. He's not supposed to reject you because you don't look like him. I lost two houses. I called my senator, tried to bring it, they reject me until today. My case is rejected because I don't look like them. But where you will do to support the black community and listen to them?
Okay. Interesting question. Yeah. You know, if elected, you know, what would you do to support, you know, the black community? And certainly, as you said, this is a statewide race. A lot of black people in Maryland, but a lot of people who are not. How do you walk that line?
Well, look, first to the gentleman who called in, if you're in Montgomery County or if not, feel free to call our office at 240-777-7811, and we'll try to help you with your situation. On the broader question, Harold, I represent everybody, and that's my job as a councilman. It'll be my job as a senator. I represent 1.1 million now. It'll be my job to represent all 6 million, and I take it very seriously. Our county is a microcosm of our state. Black folks in our state make up about 30% of the population. And then we have, obviously, a white population. We have Jewish. We have Asian. We have immigrants. People from everywhere, like my dad, who came here from Nigeria in 1970 seeking a new home. It will be my responsibility to represent and respond for every resident and to deliver for every resident, whether you're in Baltimore looking for opportunity, whether you're on the Eastern Shore in Wicomico, whether you're in Hagerstown or Silver Spring, we're going to represent you, and we're going to have set up our offices in such a way that we can reach everybody. And I think back to how I started, I believe we can have an America. I believe we can have a U.S. Senate where it's not a zero-sum game, where you can help someone in the Eastern Shore and you can help someone in Cumberland. You can help someone in Waldorf. You can help someone in Rockville, and you can have shared prosperity. The big lie right now on Capitol Hill in Washington and in most of the country is that you can't do that. And I don't believe it. And it's not what I've seen. It's not what I've experienced. And that's what America is really about. It's about an opportunity for everybody. We don't always get it right. But our job as public servants is to make sure we respond to everybody and help them address their issues. I'm going to help the black community. I'm going to help the white community. I'm going to help the Asian, Latino community. Everyone's going to have a seat at the table, and everyone's going to have shared prosperity.
Big J, thank you so much for your call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. April, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, April. What's on your mind?
Hi. I first want to congratulate Councilman Jawando. I live in Silver Spring, Maryland. I'm an African-American female, a small business owner. And I think that since he's been elected, he's been really positive, very family-oriented, and extremely involved. I'm really happy about that. The thing that I'm concerned about is the crime. You know, I don't, I'm disappointed in the Democratic Party because I feel that they pander too much to blacks to make us feel like we're victims. And I don't feel like a victim. But of the crime, that's something that's really causing me to think about moving to Virginia, because I'm disappointed in the way that Montgomery County is giving resources to its officers. I think they need to increase the pay. But overall, the crime is really decreasing the quality of life in Montgomery County, as far as I'm concerned. I just want to hear a little bit about what you're going to do to tackle that. And also, I'm concerned about the schools and activities for the children when they're not in school. Those are my main two concerns. Thank you and congratulations.
Thank you so much. By the way, they do have crime in Virginia, too. Let's be clear about that. But go ahead.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you. In response to that, I would say that's very true. But as a small business owner, I'm disappointed in the limitations and restrictions that the governor has put on concealed carry permits and where you can carry them. And I feel like that the criminals have guns and that small business owners and other private citizens should be able to have guns also and not be limited, except, of course, things like schools and churches, things like that. But some of the new things, I'm disappointed in what he's done with that. But let me let you continue, and thank you so much.
Sure, no problem. Aha, so that's the issue. But please, go right ahead.
I appreciate it. Look, everyone deserves to feel and be safe in their community. Public safety is of the utmost importance. And you asked two questions, and I'll answer them quickly. One of the reasons I joined the Montgomery County Police Department as an AmeriCorps member when I graduated high school is because I grew up in a neighborhood that was not safe in Langley Park. I had friends that were shot and killed, one of my best friends. I wanted to protect my community. I also was an FBI honors intern in college because I thought I wanted to maybe do federal law enforcement. I ended up becoming a lawyer. But I still did that to protect my community and to expand opportunity. We have to have law enforcement. I supported the $25,000 bonus for our officers to start, and we've had a higher enrollment since we rolled that out. I've supported common sense criminal justice reform that actually makes our police better public servants and guardians. I authored and passed the Community Informed Police Training Act that adds a week onto their training in the academy on socially just policing. I think we need police. I'm not in the camp that we don't need law enforcement. We just need to focus them on the right things. Part of the problem is we've asked police to get the cat out of the tree and deal with the person experiencing homelessness and deal with the person with a mental health crisis and deal with violent crime. Let's have them focus on that violent crime. And I think if we do that, they can be more focused, more highly trained. And then to your other question, invest in these programs. Research tells us that 3 to 6 are the most important hours to have kids after school on track. I had somewhere to go. I was a destination kid. I went to my mom's job and met all these amazing people that I wrote about in my book, My 7 Black Fathers. I met 3 of them at my mom's job because I had a place to go. As chair of the education committee, one of my priorities on the council has been to expand to all 211 schools after school programming, out of school time programming for kids who need it at no cost. That will be a federal priority as well, in addition to child care, because when you take care of those needs, parents can work, you can run your business, we can have our kids be safe, they can have productive things to do, that lowers crime, that produces productivity in the economy, and it builds a better community. So those things are connected, and I'll certainly be pushing that. It's why I launched Summer Rise. Right now in Montgomery County, thousands of students over the last 7 years have had a 4-week career experience program that I launched, and I ran it in its first year, and now we're funding it. Those are the types of programs I'll push at the federal level. I appreciate you expressing your concerns, though, April.
But let me ask about what she mentioned specifically.
Sure.
And that was the issue of concealed carry. Gun ownership across this country, that is such a hot-button issue. You want to run for Senate, so here's an oven mitt, but you're still going to have to touch this hot-button issue. Your thoughts about the most recent laws passed in Maryland regarding concealed carry and gun laws. I mean, she makes a point. You know, she makes a point. Business owner, she wants to feel safe, and so she wants to be able to to carry guns. This is a DMV issue, the mayor said and has said in Washington, D.C. There are too many guns on the street, legal and otherwise. And, so what do you tell business owners who want to feel safe by arming themselves in Maryland?
Well, first thing I say is I understand how you feel, right? I think too often we skip steps one, two, and three, and we try to demonize someone and get to why we think our position's right. I understand the desire and to want to be safe and to not have to worry as a business owner whether you're leaving late at night or to be safe. That is a totally rational and appropriate way to feel. What I will say, though, is that the research does not suggest in a country where we have more guns than people that having a gun is going to make you more safe. It is not. It's actually the opposite. Guns that are not, you know, every other day we see someone gets shot with an unsecured gun or that's not locked up. And I'm all for responsible gun ownership, not against that. But when you get to things like concealed carry and other things, you start to get to the line of, you know, frankly, where the NRA has been that, you know, wanting, where do you stop that? Do you want to put guns? And I know that April didn't mention this, but in schools where teachers are dealing with all these other things, that's ridiculous. The job is to reduce and provide opportunity, make sure there's adequate law enforcement, and to make sure that business owners can feel safe. I don't think guns are going to do that. And so I understand the frustration, but I think that's why we need to ban weapons of war, assault weapons. We need to crack down on gun traffickers. I think the thing is to get guns off the street that are illegal. We have a proliferation of these ghost guns that are not traceable. You have in Congress, one of the things that has hurt so much because trafficking happens when gun dealers and at gun shows are not able to be kept in check by the ATF. We have seen a precipitous fall in funding for the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agency. That needs to go up. We need to crack down on gun trafficking. We need to provide community-based supports and adequate law enforcement coverage. And I think if we do all those things, you will see a drop in crime, as we have if you look on the average. Crime has dropped. I know that's hard to hear when you hear about an incident that happens, but on the average, crime has dropped. In Montgomery County, we've had double the amount of people killed on our streets from pedestrian and roadway accidents as we had murders last year. So just to give the proper context, that doesn't mean we don't need to do anything about the spike in carjackings and other things and shootings that have happened, which are absolutely happening across the country in this region. But I just think we need to step back and have a holistic set of solutions, which does include law enforcement. But I don't think more guns is the right answer to that.
April, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Cindy, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Cindy. What's on your mind?
Hi, yeah. You know, I was listening to the Senate candidate. I can't remember his name at the moment. Sorry about that.
It's Will Jawando.
Make sure you remember that before you move back to Maryland to vote for me. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, if I could be there, I would, because one of the things you said is that endorsement doesn't win elections, and that's absolutely true. You actually need someone who's out there in the trenches, a young person like yourself that understands the day-to-day things that people are dealing with. We have people in Congress that are so out of touch. We also need to have term limits in Congress, term limits with the Supreme Court justices, and term limits with federal judges. They shouldn't be in a job forever and ever because you become out of touch. But one of the other things is that you understand what people are going through. You talk about student loans. You talk about having a family, multi-generational household. People today don't even understand a lot of the things that affect households such as yours. So I wish I could vote for you, and I wish I will tell my people about you that do live in Maryland to listen to your campaign, because we have to listen. You could say big words and they sound pretty, but what are they doing for the community? So we really got to listen. And I really think that all the different jobs you held, all the different offices that you've been in, that you understand that you are down in the trenches and you are going to fight for a better Maryland. So I wish you much success, and I really do hope you win. I really do.
Well, thank you very much.
Cindy, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Deshaun calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. Mr. Jawando, I have a couple of issues. I used to live in Prince George's County, but because of the decline in the level of education in the county and the food deserts and just the way that it seems that the folks that lived in Prince George's County were treated. It's like we were just pushed to the side when it came to certain services and what have you. And I actually came to Maryland to possibly move back, but I became depressed because things have gotten increasingly worse. So there are a couple of things. My kids are grown, but I still have family in Prince George's County. And I know that, you know, it's not all about PG County, but that's my focus right now. So what are you thinking about in terms of, and this is for all schools in Maryland, in terms of financial literacy, teaching that and implementing that or incorporating financial literacy into the school curriculums, also addressing food deserts in certain areas, particularly in Prince George's County, where they have better options in terms of food and what have you, not having liquor stores on every corner, maybe a grocery store in place of these liquor stores on every corner, and also maintaining the roadways. It is distinctly different when I come across the Woodrow Wilson Bridge from Virginia to Prince George's County. I can see the difference in the way that the roads are maintained, and even going to different parts of Maryland. Montgomery County, very well maintained, but if you go to Prince George's County, mattresses on the road, trash on the road, you know, the greenery needs to be cut. So I want to know what you're going to do in terms of making sure that everybody in the state of Maryland has access to the same level of services that other places do.
That was a lot. That was a lot. That's all right, because let me say before I have Mr. Juwando respond to that, these are some of the questions that we've been asking on this program for many, many years. So this is not an old issue, but it obviously it continues to bubble up. So.
Well, Deshaun, thank you for calling in. And I care about the entire Maryland. Look, so many of us, and you're an example of that too. This is a region. You know, I grew up in Langley Park, right on the Prince George's County Montgomery line, on the Montgomery side. The only difference was, you know, depending on where we live, sometimes I had the yellow recycle and sometimes I had the blue, depending on which county. Then when high school, we moved to Prince George's County, to Beltsville, and I lived in Bowie. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I saw from an early age the disparities, depending on where you lived, what your zip code was. And they exist in our state, in our country, and it's unacceptable. And it doesn't have to be that way. Obviously, local leadership matters. You know, I'm proud to have been elected in Montgomery County and delivered on some of the things that you said were good things. I think as chair of the Education Committee, as I mentioned earlier, it is my priority to deliver a top quality education to every child in our jurisdiction, in our state, in the country. We need to put more money into education, more money into childcare. We need to pay teachers more. We need to make sure that our services, part of this infrastructure bill that passed, we need to make sure we're rebuilding our roadways and bridges and make sure that our workers are cleaning up the roads. You mentioned that as well. I think those are all things that matter. All politics is local. And being a U.S. senator is important because you pass things for the whole country. But it's also important because you have a bully pulpit. And even though you might not be directly responsible for trash pickup in Prince George's County or the schools, you can give money. You can come into those communities and create partnerships, and I will use the full weight and power of my office to make sure that every child, every person in Maryland has what they need to thrive. It is not a zero-sum game. I agree with you. It's not that way now, but that's going to be my laser focus. That's why I'm in this work, and I will fight for that.
Deshaun, thank you so much for raising some really important issues again. So I appreciate your phone call. I do want to talk to you about something that is local, but it's also a national issue. Right now, the anti-hate task force is meeting in Montgomery County to address, hate-related issues. Can you kind of give us a thumbnail sketch of what is happening in Montgomery County? I mean, you know, there was this billboard, the electronic billboard that had been hacked, and there were racist messages just a few days ago. And for the county to have to establish an anti-hate task force, some would say, well, this is a good thing because they're trying to address it. But the other side is they have to address it.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we are not alone in that you've seen a rise in hate speech and hate acts across our region, across our country. And in Montgomery County, we're taking it head on. The only way, as Dr. King said, only light can drive out darkness. And you have to get everything on the table. You have to have the difficult conversations. You have to speak out against hate every time. And then you have to have strategies to address it. In this commission, which is, it's the organizing meeting tonight. It's going to have several other meetings. I'll be at several of the others. My staff is at the one tonight in Wheaton. And I encourage residents to engage with it. But it's going to bring together folks who have been impacted, but also folks who are working on ways to bring us together. I think right now, there's many in our country who are making their living off of fear and division and hate. This campaign, my career in public service, my life, is about the opposite of that, of hope, of opportunity, of inclusiveness. And that's what we represent in Montgomery County. That's what we represent in Maryland. And this task force is an example of that, that every time something happens, we come together in a interfaith cross, whether it's our Jewish community being attacked, our Muslim community, our Black community, our immigrant community, and we say we're not standing for this, and we're going to put things in place to foster and cultivate understanding, but also to marginalize those who would seek to do this and have penalties. Our police have stepped up in a really positive way, and those who have been involved in some of these acts have been brought to justice, and we're going to keep doing that because it's not acceptable in our pluralistic, multicultural society. Unfortunately, though, when you go on the internet, you go around the country, people are trying to divide us, and again, I reject that lie. We are who we are. We're the greatest country in the world, with our flaws and all, because we have a multiracial, multiethnic, multigenerational society.
If you were in the U.S. Senate right now, representing Maryland, you would be having to at least observe, if not address, one of the headlines coming from the Hill today, and that is that Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville finally, after more than a month, gave identified white nationalists that term as a racist term. But at least since May, he had publicly come out and said that white nationalists were Americans and did not agree with the widely accepted definition of white nationalists are indeed racist. I would say that you are the anti Tommy Tuberville.
I think that's right.
Politically, among other more obvious things. But, how would you deal with that kind of what is essentially, in some cases, a political cold civil war on the Hill right now?
Yeah, well, it's tough times. And, I'm a student of history. And there's a reason we're fighting now to tell our history, because when you understand our history, you not only understand where we've come from and what we've gone through, but what we need to do to get out of it and move forward. And that's why people are trying to not let us read certain books and to not say certain terms in parts of the country. But I know, for example, when we passed the 13th Amendment in this country, outlawing slavery, except in the case of incarceration, which is something we still need to address, members of Congress were fighting on the floor of the House and the Senate, literally fighting. But we got through it. We passed it. And it wasn't perfect. Then we had Jim Crow. And then we passed the civil rights laws. And then we took more steps forward, and then we took other steps forward, backward. We're in a backward step right now. The Accord, affirmative action, LGBTQ rights, women's bodily autonomy, this hate that's being sown. But I know the history of this country, and the arc of the moral universe does bend towards justice. And I think our job is to keep pushing, to keep fighting, and being open-minded to talk to different people. Even Tommy Tuberville, I'm happy to help educate him on the history of this country, that he apparently does not know that this country was founded on the white supremacist notion that people that look like you and I were innately inhuman. And that was our economic system. That's what built the railroads, what built this city that we sit in right now, what built this country. And that's just a fact. Now, we've come a long way from that. But that's why you need to know it, because if you don't know that, you get these kind of statements. Oh, well, they're just Americans. No, we're all Americans. And that those who seek to say we have a white nationalist society only, and that's something that we need to idealize, that's a racist idea even though it is also a uniquely American idea in that that's how we were founded. But it's not who we are today. And I think you have to talk that truth to people and work to move forward. I think a part of this problem, too, is that we don't want to have those conversations. We want to go and talk to people who agree with us and then not talk to others. I think we have to talk to everybody. And, you know, the average age of the Senate is 76. And so there's some people in there that have some views from a time where this information wasn't readily available. And our job is to work with them the best we can. We have a saying in my household that and on my campaign, my feet are firmly planted, but my arms are wide open. I'm going to talk to you. I know where I'm coming from. I know what I'm fighting for and who I'm fighting for. But I'm going to work with you because that's the process we have. That's the democratic process. There's 100 U.S. senators, 2 from every state. You have to work with folks to get stuff done. And that's what I'll do in the Senate.
Let me double down just a little bit more because I'm personally curious. How do you talk to someone about the gut-wrenching, difficult history of this country who is afraid to hear something that is completely opposite of what they are taught?
You do it in a way that is not designed to call them out. Right. Often we're talking at each other through the media. And there are times when you have to talk through the media and you have to posture and do political stuff. But, you know, I sit next to and he'll probably laugh. My friend Sidney Katz is on the county council with me. I'm one of the youngest members. He's the oldest member. When he went to schools in Montgomery County, they were segregated. We sit next to each other on the council and we have learned a great deal from one another. I talk to him quietly. We talk on the side. Sometimes we talk in public. I think personal stories that people knew, telling your own personal story, sharing your truth with people is a way to move forward. Now, does that mean everyone's going to agree or they're going to learn overnight? Absolutely not. But I do think the effort is worth it because that we're all in this house that is America together. And we have to try. We have to try.
Final question for me. As you know, I live in Baltimore. One of your opponents, David Trone, has, some could argue, more money than God. And I
not my God.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. That's a good comeback. I think I'll use that one. But as a consumer of information and television, I see his advertisements all over the place. I've yet to see yours. I've not seen Angela Alsobrooks either. When might we begin to see TV ads from you?
So, you know, look, I've worked on a lot of campaigns. This is my 5th campaign as a candidate. I worked on the Obama campaign in the White House. I worked on other campaigns as a manager and staff. It is just frankly not an effective use of time right now to be running TV ads almost a year out from the election. You know, people are dealing with the things I talked about at the top. Rent, food, housing, you know, education, trying to do their summer plans. They're not thinking about an election. Most people don't even know the election is next May 14th, the primary. So, you know, I think what we're doing now is we're building the momentum on the ground. We're getting around the state. I'll be in church. I'll be in Baltimore at Empowerment Temple this Sunday. I'm working my way across the state, talking to people across the state, having house parties, meet and greets. That's this stage of the campaign, and we're raising money. We're going to raise money, and we're going to have enough at the right time, when people pay attention, early next year, to make sure that we are running TV ads. We've run some Facebook ads. We've done some digital. We've been more targeted. I think, you know, someone who has all that money to spend, you know, good for him. But I don't think it's going to be effective. The last thing I'll say on that is we're going to make sure that people see us enough to make a choice. This is a statewide election. You can't buy a statewide election. People will see his ads and will know who he is, but they will see us and know who I am too. And I think when they make that choice, as you heard from a lot of the callers today, it'll be an easy choice for folks to make because we have the best message. We're fighting for all Marylanders, and we've done the work and know how to do the work to bring us together.
Well, without, who knows who that choice, may be for those who are starting to really pay attention, but certainly there are going to be some continued hard issues. I think Deshaun really kind of laid out not just what's happening in Prince George's County, but really across the state. I think she was illustrative of a lot of stuff that people are thinking about. But Will Jawando, Montgomery County Councilman and U.S. Senate candidate, good luck to you. Thank you so much for coming in. We will be in touch.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for Tuesday, July 11th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.